Welcome to The Comeback with Brenda Dennehy. I'm absolutely thrilled to have my first guest, the incredible Aisling Thompson. Aisling is a GAA Camogie star with 6 All-Ireland titles and 4 All-Stars to her name. She's one of the most accomplished athletes in the sport. But what truly blows me away is her resilience and strength off the field. I've been aware of Aisling for years and we've exchanged messages on social media from time to time, but we'd never met in the flesh. I knew she was going to be an amazing person, but when I finally sat down with her, she completely blew me away. Not only is she a phenomenal athlete, but she is also so sound, incredibly generous with her time, and truly a remarkable person. After a conversation I left on such a high, her energy is contagious. In this episode, Aisling talks about hitting rock bottom at just 19, experiencing coercive control, something she's never shared before, losing a friend to suicide, and how just a year later she captained Cork to an All-Ireland victory. Then in 2019, she faced rock bottom once again after an incident on a night out. But as you'll hear, Aisling picked herself back up and is now playing the best camogie of her career at 35. This is the comeback with the incredible Aisling Thompson. When I started planning this podcast, you were the first person who came to my mind, Aisling. And my God, what a comeback you've made,
thank you.
We will get to soon. But how are you today? How's all things
today? I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for coming on my podcast. Aisling, I know of you from, I suppose, GAA and social media and following your progress over the last years. But for people who don't know you, where are you from? Where do you grow up? And how was, I suppose, your childhood and all that?
So I'm from Newtown Chandrum originally. I'm actually still in Newtown Chandrum. I have 2 older brothers, mother and father. Pretty much my whole childhood has been engulfed in sport. I actually went to National School in Milford because my mother taught there when I was small. So it was natural for us to go to school in Milford. And then I played camogie with Milford as well because the club was set up around that time when I was around 7. So that's why I ended up a Milford woman, you could say. Most
I
people think
that, yeah. Right.
Everyone thinks I'm Milford, but I live and have always lived in Newtown Chandrum. But again, my mother's connection with the teaching and setting up the club, it was just natural for me to join there. So yeah, and again, just pretty much engulfed in sport from the get-go, like from national school the whole way up, and went to school then, went on to go to school in St. Mary's in Charleville.
How was that?
That was great. Another very, very successful sporting school. Like, so if you wanted to succeed in camogie or play for Cork, like that was really the stepping stone. Many phenomenal Milford players, even Limerick players, Ballygren, Charleville, Ballyhea, they all went to school in Charleville. So I was pretty much set up, I suppose, from the get-go. Like,
was it Newtown Chandrum? Is that where Ben and Jerry are from?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it Ben and Jerry?
Yeah, Ben and Jerry.
I was mad into the hurling back those days, yeah. The rock and all that.
Yeah, and O'Connor Hurley's like...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So very much that part of Cork is very much a hurling. It's not really... It's football isn't very as prominent.
No, it's all hurling.
So you're a proper country girl as well.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
We love the country. And then I suppose I'm going to lean on to... You started college. You went to college for a while?
I went to college. Well, I first wanted to... I was hoping to do something in sport, but then I went away from that and... Armed Response and the Guards was always the next.
We weren't doing that.
Yeah, like I don't think Armed Response was actually a thing at the time, but it was always the Guards, something around maybe Special Forces, again, as we call it now, Armed Response, Prison Officer. It was all around that type of work is what I really wanted to do. So I ended up going to the College of Com to do an entrance course for the Guards. And then, unfortunately, around the same time, I had a serious enough car accident.
I was going to ask you about that because I was reading something you had written in the Sports Chronicle. And I hope you don't mind if I read it to you, because this is all, I suppose, about your own story. So you had written this a couple of years ago, I think in 2020 you wrote it. So you said, when I hit rock bottom, I was only 22 years of age. I genuinely didn't want to look at myself in the mirror because I was disgusted with the person that I turned out to be. That might be harsh of me but to say about myself, but it's the truth. I was just disgusted by the person in the reflection. It started with a car crash. When I read that, the one thing that stood out to me, you were only 22 years old. I know that you started to kind of spiral in earlier years, but even there now to say you were disgusted by the person in the reflection. Can you take us back to, I suppose, the car crash and what was happening before the car crash?
So I think it was around, it was close enough to like fifth year, kind of my leaving mm-hmm. cert. I guess before that time, like throughout school, I was never really interested in like having boyfriends or going out or any of that kind of stuff. Wearing makeup, none of that. Because again, I was just totally engulfed in sport, a real tomboy. So I guess then, yeah, again, my latter stages of secondary school, I just kind of turned to the makeup and the going out. And I think we were going out at that age, like, and then boys got involved. And but I feel like I was always drawn towards the wrong boys, unfortunately.
The boy racers.
Yeah, the boy racers, Tonys. The Tonys.
Guilty in ways. Oh, yeah, totally. Gonna. Did you, I must ask, did you ever go out in the Highland?
I did, yeah.
Did you go underage, like myself?
No, do you know what? I was never that much into drink.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe I suppose around 17, 18, I maybe drank heavier. But like even going through like teenage discos, there was always girls and boys that like drank at those.
Yeah.
At a very young age. I didn't. No, it was something that I was never really that drawn to. Even now, like, again, I'll drink and have the crack. But, like, I don't actually like alcohol. And I never have from a young age up.
Taste of it or how it makes you feel?
Both.
Right.
Yeah. There's very, very little drink that I would like the taste of, but more so how it makes me feel.
We'll say now if Cork went on to win the Camogie All-Ireland this year now, which hopefully they will.
Yeah.
If you're involved, of course. What would your, like, if go on the sesh, what would you be drinking in... We'll say the Burlington that night.
Oh, God. So, I don't really know. I try, I suppose you kind of go hard straight off the back of a win.
Yeah.
So, it's probably straight on the spirits.
And then would you be the type of person, if the drink the next day, would you have a really big low?
Well, you see, it's different then when you're amongst the group. I wouldn't. I feel like adrenaline and excitement
gotcha.
And celebrating, you don't feel it as much. But I feel like... that if I went home after a night out and the next day I wasn't with my friends, I most certainly wouldn't feel myself. Or, and I'd have the fear for no reason. Like
to go back then, as you were saying about hanging around with the wrong boys,
yeah.
Were you getting in relationships with the wrong guys or were you just hanging around with them? Or
it started kind of hanging around, but I feel like I was in relationships quite a lot when I was younger. I don't ever really remember being single and kind of meeting one here and there. It was always straight into relationships. So... when I was young, like my mother was probably my closest person to me, like my best friend. Because again, I had no friends really in Newtown because I went to school in Milford. So I didn't really have a group of friends that were at an arm's length. Do you know what I mean? They were 10 minutes over the road. And at the same time, I was involved in so much sport at the time that we were 7 days a week on the road, just me and Mam playing sport. Like I played at everything you could imagine. And then my dad worked overseas for the majority of my younger years. So I don't know, was that a void that I felt like I needed to fill from
gotcha.
A male perspective? Obviously, when he was around, he was great and all that, but I feel like he was probably gone at times for 9 months of the year. And then I had no granddads either. So my mum's dad passed before I was born and I've never met my dad's dad. So, do you know, there was always,
yeah.
I feel, maybe a male link that was missing in a sense. Again, don't get me wrong, my dad was great when he was around, but... it's still a long time. And then you have basically your mother who's your best friend and probably bringing you up for most of that youth. So maybe, I don't want to blame anyone because again, it's all down to your own choices too. But maybe that's what drew me towards men very quickly and trying to get into relationships so quickly because maybe I was trying to fill a void. And maybe, again, I was just unlucky with the people that I selected.
And were they unhealthy relationships?
Yeah.
Kind of, was it, would say cheating or was it just they didn't speak very nicely, she didn't treat you nice? What kind of...
initially it was just didn't treat me nice. Again, there was probably a few like other boys that were good to me from the start and then it might have went to didn't treat me nice, cheated, and then maybe went to like substance abuse. You know, would have been involved in like, you know, gangs and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like it started innocent but it ended really badly. You know, very ugly and very violent. Like a lot of physical and mental abuse, but then a lot of substance abuse on top of it.
Okay, really? And then the physical abuse, would that have been the abuse on you by the male?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Would say, could you mind me asking, like, as in hitting you?
Yeah, I've been struck numerous times, yeah. But that was more so, I feel like, again, it kind of went from being harmless to, like, I'd say one of my last relationships was probably the worst. To be fair, I did escape. I'd say a lot of the time it was more so an emotional slash mental abuse. But again, they kind of came from abusive households. So I feel like, yeah, it was just a situation where I don't know, maybe they obviously were hurting, and you know, I feel like at times a lot of people hurt the closest person to you. You know, I always felt like they definitely have come from a place where they don't mean it, but you know, they just can't help it, and I'm the next, you know, in line in terms of being a target. But no, I would say a lot of it was more so like the cheating and the fighting and all that, but I would say that from relationship to relationship, they did progressively get worse.
And did your self-worth decrease?
Yeah, and I think that's why they got worse, because I didn't value myself, and every relationship I was in, I felt like my confidence, how I valued myself, it got lower and lower as the relationships went on, where I guess I felt like I was worthless, like to a point. And when you feel worthless and that vulnerable in a relationship, it's like, even if they're physically or mentally abusive, it's very hard to walk away from it, because I guess you feel like at times they're the only people that you have in that moment. And especially when I turn my back on a lot of people, I turn my back on my own family and my closest friends. And I think, even though we're kind of telling a long story short, even in that space of like 3 or 4 years, it had got to a point where I felt like I had nobody. Like, the thought of leaving that person was very scary, even though I was a piece of shit in their shoe. Like, do you know
what I mean? I was going to ask, and of course, hurt people hurt people.
Mm.
You're so right there. I was going to ask there, but you kind of answered it. Especially your mother at the time, was she worried? Was she trying to get through to you? Were you just like ignoring her? Like, I don't want, you know, leave me do my own thing. What was the situation there?
Oh yeah, like she would have went through a wall like to try and talk to me or get me back. But I was literally so brainwashed. And again, there was a lot of substance abuse involved. So I think it just got to a point where I was completely out of control. And again, I was in relationships where I wasn't allowed to go out and socialise with people. Like, do you know what I mean?
Were you living with them at the time, or were they and they were like, you can't go out?
No, I wasn't even allowed to have my own friends. So like, it came to a point, where I'd say, I'm going into town to meet my friends or this person or that person. He'd be like, no, you're not. Like, it was very, and I probably have never really openly spoke about this, but yeah, it was very much what would you call that?
Coercive control.
Yeah, coercive control, I guess. No, I definitely wasn't allowed to go out, have my own friend groups.
How did you get out of it? What eventually kind of led to you leaving that relationship?
So again, I think I had spiraled so much in well, you could say a long time, even though it seems like a short period nowadays. Like, again, it was 3 or 4 years of constant abuse, like with your substance abuse on top of it. I think it just came to a point, where I felt like I had lost everything. I was getting suicidal thoughts fairly soon into that period. Like, it wasn't just at rock bottom. I was getting all these emotions throughout that 3 or 4 years where I was like, where am I going with my life? What am I doing? Every now and again. And then I'd forget about it and, you know, do whatever I was doing at the time. And I don't know. Do you know what? I can't really remember half of it, because I feel like with trauma, a lot of it is in the back of my mind, which is great, because I don't remember like most of my years as a teenager. Even as a young child, I really failed to remember like 80% of that time, which is no harm. But yeah, I feel like I've just eventually came to a point where, well, he had kind of left me. I still could have gone there if I wanted to. But also my cousin kind of stepped in at the time and we became close. And I feel like she was probably afraid to approach me at times. Like, I was very unapproachable. I was very aggressive. So I feel like she kind of tried to approach me in the simplest way she could. And then, even though I was still playing camogie as well at the time, I never gave up
camogie. I was going to ask, and were you doing any bit of college or working or anything like that?
No, no.
But you were still playing sport?
I was still playing sport. So like, there was a short period all right after the accident where I couldn't play, but still throughout those years in the latter stages, like, I still was playing away, kind of tipping away with Cork and stuff at lower levels and tipping away at Milford. So I feel like just my cousin stepping in and kind of having that sport in the background. And then he got rid of me, I guess, at a point where I was pretty much worthless to him. Do you know, there was kind of no more for me to give, like, or no more for him to take from me at that moment. Like, he knew I had hit rock bottom. So again, I was no good to him. Like, I was just a broken girl. Like, so again, and it was the suicidal thoughts and all of that. But I don't really know what it was. I can't put my finger on what actually said, look, you have to change things here. Like, you need to make a turnaround. But I would say that probably sport and just having that one or two people that kind of kept my family as well, like, were always going to be there for me. They never have once turned their back on me, no matter how bad I was. They've never once thrown me out or made me to fend for myself. Like, the door was always open whenever I was ready.
And then we'll say, leading up then, you had the car crash. So you had a big car crash. Did the car crash come after you had left that relationship?
No, it was before.
That was before, so yeah. The car crash. So that was a massive event in your life too, because you got so injured with the car crash and then you couldn't train for it.
Exactly. Now, I wouldn't blame it completely on the road that I took. Like, again, I was kind of just getting involved with boys and stuff like that. But I suppose going to college would have kept me on the straight and narrow, I would assume. I would have hoped it would have. And then I suppose being taken away from college, but then my sport too. I feel like that was just the point where, like, things flipped on its head for me. And would that not have happened, like, I probably would have taken a different path, you know. So it's hard that way. I don't want to fully blame it, because before that I was kind of leading myself into, again, the wrong friend groups and relationships that weren't good for me. But at the same time, once the sport and college were snapped from me, like, it's kind of like I just, it was overnight, like, where things just kind of shit hit the fan, I guess.
And do you think as well, so you're so young, and were you ever resentful with the word, like, why me? This is so unfair. I'm so young. Mm. Was there a period where you were resentful, as in, like you're saying there, you didn't necessarily want to go on. Were you resentful with the world, especially as you were still playing the GAA and I mean, so much, and then the car crash happened. And then, of course, you had actually gone back playing and you met, was it Frankie?
Frank Flannery.
He was a massive part of your life, because soon after that, you kind of got yourself back on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
And then another massive event happened where someone you had been seeing, he passed away, suicide. So that was, you were getting your life back on track, and then that happened.
Exactly.
So can you explain, like, leading up to that, as in how you probably thought everything was getting better, and then that happened? Like, you must have been resentful. You must have been, again, wanting to feel like giving up.
Definitely, because I just left all that past behind me, you know, where I was probably at my wit's end at that point. You know, I was kind of on my deathbed, really. Like, it was only going to go one way or the other. I was either going to get through it or I was going to top myself. And I feel like, again, my cousin just kind of stepping in, still having my sport in the background. And then I think some of the Milford girls had a conversation with him at the time. They obviously knew what was going on, like, it's a small place, like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they had a conversation with him just to say, like, this is what's happening in her life at the moment. Like, she's in a really bad place. She's, like, a brilliant player, this and that. Like, we need to get her back. Like, we need everybody back. Because we knew we had the ability to win an All-Ireland. Like, we knew we had the players, not even an All-Ireland. Obviously, our first step was going to be a county, because we had never won one. But we knew the belief and the ability that was in that group, but it needed to take everyone. So I think that's the first thing they did, is they kind of approached him and just said, look, this is what's going on. So I think some of the girls came to the house, or I don't know, I can't remember what the conversation was exactly, but they said, look, this is the story. We're getting in a new coach, a new trainer. He's somebody that we don't know, and we think you like him. And I said, grand. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be bullshit. Like, because I think I was pretty much, things were getting sour with Milford too. And I felt like, again, from that front, trainers didn't really have my back. And it wasn't that. At the time, they didn't understand what I was going through. Nobody knew, because I never spoke about it. So I was just really aggressive again on the pitch, lashing out, stuff like that. So I felt really misunderstood, let's say, the year previous. So I was kind of at my wit's end with Camogie too. But when they explained that to me, that there was going to be a whole flip, I went back to training, met Frankie, and we just clicked instantly. And I felt like it almost took somebody that came from a place where they knew nothing about me. Do you know what I mean? Never judged me, and really kind of wanted to get to know me as a person, not just as an athlete. Like, didn't want to take me for granted or take advantage of me as a player. It was more so he wanted to know Aisling Thompson. Like, he didn't want to know anything else. And I feel like he was kind of like a fairy godmother or something in that moment, because I feel like that's exactly what I needed at that point in my life, was somebody that was just going to say, I'll be here for you no matter what. And you can ring me no matter what time of the day it is. I don't care what happens or what you're doing at the time. Like, call me if you need me and I'll be here for you. And we're going to do this together. And I was like, this is unbelievable. So a couple of months takes off. I was, you know, again, still on the straight and narrow, like, really enjoying it. I felt like I was just really coming back to myself. And I'd met a really good boy in those few months as well, in that actually past year or two. And he ended up committing suicide. And I got the phone call while I was on the way to training. And he was the type of fella where you'd never actually know, like, you'd never know there was something going on. And he said, like, there wasn't one sign from my side, even my cousin's side. And she, you know, as much as I was blind at times, like, she even said it too, that we never saw the signs of anything with him. But we'll never know. As I said, he didn't speak. We'll never actually know what tipped him over the edge. But I didn't really talk to him in that 2 weeks. But myself and my cousin had met him. This is just a few days, I'd say, before it happened. And Funderland was on in Limerick, and we had met him, and we just asked him, like, do you want to come to Funderland or whatever? And he was like, no, I'm not feeling great. And, like, he would never pass up the opportunity to have a bit of crack with us or come anywhere with us. Like, we were great friends, not just on a relationship terms. Like, we were really good friends, all of us. And he was like, no, I'm just not feeling great or whatever. I was like, that's very strange. And then not too long after that, like, he ended up taking his life. He was on life support for some time, but he ended up passing away. So,
and were you on the way to training when he was after passing away, or when he had attempted to take his life, but he was still on life support?
He was still on life support.
And did you proceed with going to training that night?
Yeah.
That is,
I don't know what, but I feel like I was almost in shock. Like, I didn't believe what had happened, or else I had it in my mind that he'd be okay. Again, I've never been in that kind of a situation before. He was a really strong person in general, really nice as well. So, and again, I've never been close to someone that has tried to commit suicide. So in my mind, I was like, no, he'll make it. But at the same time, I think I was just in shock. And that was my safe place. My safe spot was training. That's where I felt my safest, you see, around Frankie and the girls. So that's why I continued to go. Sure, I wasn't too long into training when I just couldn't, like, I was just broke down. And he came over to the sideline, and I just said, look, like, I've tried everything in my power to snap, like, to get back here, like, and I'm doing my best, but I feel like, you know, this just isn't for me, like, you know. And I felt like I was being punished before. Like, I wasn't religious, I didn't believe in God, because why am I being so punished if, you know, there's a God out there, like. Do you know what I mean? I know it's a weird thing to say.
No, I totally understand.
I could never understand before, like, why I was so punished. Again, self-inflicted, but sure, you don't understand that when you're young. Like.
No, of course. And you were so young.
Yeah.
Actually, you're so young.
And again, mental health isn't a thing. So, like, everyone had to figure out these things in their own mind. There was no such thing as mental health.
No, there was no, there's so much spoken.
Yeah.
No, but back then, as we all know, it was looked at as, and you were weak.
Oh, yeah.
You struggled mentally.
Exactly.
Now everyone knows the sign of strength, but you were suffering in silence. And at that young age, dealing with all that.
Exactly.
As I said to you, you had to feel the why me, the resentfulness.
That's what, exactly.
The why,
what you
and
said.
You have to have that moment. And then you let people, oh, but sure, look, why not you? And all this, and you're like, but you just need those moments where you're like, why me, to have that?
Yeah.
But I think then Frankie, did you have a chat with him, and did he kind of spur you on to keep going and not quit? Can you kind of tell me about that conversation?
Yeah, so he just took me to the side and said, like, I just reiterated that, like, this is obviously not meant to be, like, for me. I've been trying now, even though it had been a sharp period, but... And I had saw a little bit of progress in that moment. So, like, then when, you know, the suicide happened, I was like, nah, this is not for me. Like, I'm not meant to be here. Like, I'm meant to be punished. And there's something that I must have done to receive this type of punishment. It's very hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel when you thought there was a glimmer and then it's gone. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he just took me to the side and said, like, no matter what, I promise, he said, we'll get through this together. Like, if no matter what happens, if he doesn't make it, like, I promise I will be there for you through thick and thin, and that you will make it. And he kind of just said that, like, he promised me, and I had trusted him, even though I hadn't known him that long. I had so much trust in him for some reason. Again, because I felt like I didn't have anyone else in that moment that I could really, really trust, bar my cousin. So... I don't know, again, it was just a simple conversation, and I said, right, like, we'll just deal with the next few days, deal with what happens. But, like, again, I can't put my finger on what it was that made that change, but I always look back at it and think, like, it's sport and the people that I've met along the way. Mm-hmm. Do you know, even though at times I was playing it and in the worst position of my life, I felt like it was always in the background for me.
And it's your saviour.
Yeah,
sports, your saviour.
Because a lot of people think that, on the flip side, did it lead you into a lot of chaos too? But I don't think so. Like, I think life took turns
detour.
For reasons, you know.
Yeah, took
and it,
a detour.
Exactly. But like, I'll always go back and say like that if I didn't have sport and if it wasn't there in the background, I don't think I ever would have made it out. Like,
I was going to say, if you didn't have the sport, especially the camogie, then we'll say if your injury was prolonged, and I'd say you was something you might never move on from, a very, very, I know it was a serious injury, and you were left without camogie or sport, do you think you'd be here now?
I don't think so. I don't, because again, I was just involved with the wrong crowd, you know, around that time the injury happened. So I think I probably would have never made it out of those abusive relationships. And even if I did, I wouldn't have anything to fall back on.
Okay.
Even as much as I like had my family and I had people if I needed them, it wasn't enough. Like,
was it, and a sport, of course, a release for you.
Yeah.
Probably with all your anxiety.
And the physical.
Everything that goes with it.
Yeah, it's the exercise. It's the physical. The impact that it has on your mental health. You know, it's the physical training, the movement, the lifting in the gym, like all of that.
I always say, even for myself, that like movement is medicine, and I bet you you're like,
yeah, it is. And I don't just say it because I'm a camogie player. Like, I've played camogie all my life, and not just movement, like it's the nutrition, you know, it's the your recoveries, you know, doing the sauna, all that stuff. Like, everything has science behind it. And
yeah.
I would say that I've played camogie in the past, but not it the healthiest, and not had myself hanging around with the right friend groups, and you know, I was still at bottom of the barrel. Like, it's a combination of, you know, movement, being around the right people, the right environments. Your nutrition is massive, your recovery is massive. And I feel like that's why I'm in such a strong position at the moment, is because you couldn't even compare the
what you were back then.
No.
Even though you were playing quite well, it was an awful time in your life when your former, we'll say, partner, boyfriend passed away. And you were saying how much Frankie helped you, and you know, he was like, don't give up. I think it was less than 2 years later then, was it Frankie said for you to, you got the opportunity to captain Cork?
Well, no, so it's a thing in Cork that if you win the county, so
Is that the way?
Yeah.
Okay, right.
So we ended up winning, well, actually it was because Frankie came in 2012, so we ended up winning the county in 2012, Munster, and went on to win the All-Ireland. That would have been March 2013. So the club season went into the following year, you could say. Like, you'd start in 2012, but it would finish in March 2013. And then that's when I was asked from Cork, would I come back and play with the senior team?
Gotcha.
So
understood.
I went back with Cork then in 2013. Now, I didn't captain in 2013, but we went on to win with Milford. You see, four counties, four Munsters and three All-Irelands.
Incredible.
The counties in a row. So I got the opportunity then in 15 and 16 to captain Cork.
And tell me what that was like. So, like, people listening, you've heard in the lead up to all the trauma, the abusive relationships, the substance abuse, the coercive control, not wanting to live anymore, not wanting to be around, in a short space of time, and you were captaining the Cork camogie team.
Mm.
In, was it 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, you could say, what, 13? Yeah, space of 2 or 3 years, that was it. Like, yeah.
I mean, if that's not the epitome of a comeback, what was that feeling like for you? What, like, can you explain? Were you in disbelief? Were you like, I deserve this after everything I've been through? What was it like
no,
for you?
I think initially when I was asked to captain, I was kind of scared because I wasn't a massive personality in the dressing room or anything like that. I did my talking on the pitch. But when I went from Milford, like, I was very comfortable around Milford, obviously, because they're like my sisters. Like, they've always been unbelievable and so supportive, and they've always been there for me. Whereas you're going from Milford into Cork, where I wouldn't have known a lot of them personally. And then again, there's always going to be a little aggro at Milford, because we're like, you know, the county champions, Munster and All-Ireland champions. And we would have always been really good coming up too. So there was always a bit of tension, you know, between us and everybody else. So I felt I was kind of more nervous. Even after a couple of years, I still wouldn't have said much in the dressing room, like, because so many big personalities too, like, and unbelievable players at that time. And then I had a bit of a stage fright thing too, so I knew there'd be a lot of media involved, and, like, you know, even doing photo shoots and talking to the media and stuff like that. So wasn't something I was very comfortable with either. But at the same time, I was like Captain in Cork. Like,
did you? It sounds like you had imposter syndrome.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Were you probably kind of feeling? Were you any stage? No, obviously you'd work your way up. You're an amazing player. Were you a bit like, oh my god, people must be thinking like, oh, I don't belong here. That should be someone else. Were you those kind of thoughts around you? Like,
maybe not imposter syndrome. No, maybe not imposter syndrome.
Confidence?
I think it was a confidence thing. I suppose, like, it wasn't too long before that where I was with people that were had absolutely shattered my confidence, you know, in myself. I was really insecure as well, I guess. And then I was kind of dabbling in media myself anyway at that time. You know, that's when, like, the first stories broke of my own mental health struggles. And I think it was around 2014, like. So I was still very conscious of what people thought of me. And, yeah, I think it was more so like an insecurity thing and a confidence issue.
I remember actually working here, and I remember when I think you did the Cycle Against Suicide.
Yeah.
And we the face of that, and yeah. You were big in that campaign. And it was like you burst onto the scene.
Yeah, it kind of came out of nowhere, like,
and
yeah.
Everyone, you were everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think I would have been, oh, that camogie player with the tattoos.
Mm, yeah, that's pretty much it.
You had a powerful message to share, an awful traumatic story, but you were very powerful. And as we were saying earlier in the chat, there wasn't a lot of stuff about mental
health.
This
is it. Yeah, that's why it took off, you see.
Took off. And I don't think there was, I can't remember any other kind of woman really doing it at that time either.
No.
And do you think that's where really nationwide, even people outside of GAA they never knew really who Aisling Thompson was. This was in depth, but to say we're aware of who the persona Aisling Thompson was.
Yeah, exactly.
How was that then? Because you were saying you were kind of struggling with confidence, but then on a national scale, everyone knows who you are.
Well, you see, I guess it was so positive at the time. I rarely got negativity. It was so positive. So it did make me feel, you know, really good about myself. I guess I was nervous at the time because, again, I was conscious of what people would have thought of me or what they, you know, would they see me as weak, having, you know, mental health difficulties. And I didn't really understand. I was saying depression, but I couldn't really put a label on it. I didn't know myself what it was, but I was just, I suppose, not guessing, but, well, I was just speaking about my feelings, I guess, and depression is kind of a word that you would use, yeah, because that's exactly how I felt, like, and again, having suicidal thoughts and things like that. So I guess opening up and sharing those thoughts was a very scary thing, but once all the positivity came with it, like, and a lot of support, like, and from, you know, people and players and even, like, male and female, like, past players I would have looked up to as a small girl and a child messaging me. It was unbelievable, like, the initial reaction.
It probably felt like it came full circle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then was there any kind of time, I suppose, you were just like, oh, this is getting a bit too much.
Mm.
Like, I wanted to share my own story, hoping it would help other people, but this is just getting a bit intense.
Yeah, I felt like at times I was definitely being pulled and dragged. I don't think I understood the meaning of no, and I wasn't media trained either. I had offers to sign up with agencies and things like that, but I didn't really trust people in terms of how they'd use me or money or anything like that. So I always kind of kept to myself in those things and just tried to stay as authentic as possible in terms of, again, just sharing my experience and how I felt in those moments. Yeah, at a time it just became really overwhelming. And then I suppose you do see a lot of the nasty side then too amongst the younger generation and people my own age around that time, because I was getting so many sponsorships and opportunities that, of course, like, a jealousy factor was going to kick in. So I feel like on the pitch and on social media and stuff like that, I was getting a lot of shit for it. And that's when people would talk about my appearance and stuff like that as well. But for the most part, again, it was really, really positive. You could always differentiate the genuine people from the jealous people. But as a young girl, and I'd like to say it didn't get to me, of course it was going to, when someone is commenting, not only, no, never questioned me in terms of my own experience, because you can't question that, but it was more so, or her tattoos are shit, or she's looking for attention, and, you know, again, commenting on my appearance, like, so it did get nasty, I guess, after a while. So I felt like, again, I was probably doing too much, not to make an excuse for people, but it got very overwhelming, I guess, at the later points. Like,
do you know, I'm always curious, are you friends outside of it then, the different teams?
Yeah, you would be.
But while you're on the pitch, it's like,
no, let's say the people that go deep and they go personal, no, I would never be friends with, obviously.
Yeah, but there was that from
certain players and certain counties. And Yeah, but sure, that's what comes with it. Like, that happens every day in men's GA. Like, do you know what I mean? It's probably way worse sledging in men's than what it is in women's. I wouldn't find it now at all, because I feel like, do you know, I'm obviously, I'm 35 years of age now and stuff, whereas before I was younger, and I guess, again, the whole promoting, the sponsorships, all that, I was probably the only player in the country getting it at the time. So, whereas now it's very common. And again, I'm 35 years of age and I think I've earned that respect. Like,
yeah.
And probably was a pain though, like, do you know what I mean?
One, and then going to lead on to what was your, I'm sure you weren't praying in the hall, definitely weren't praying in the hall. I had said to you when we were chatting before we started recording about a second rock bottom, I had asked you about an incident. Did you see it as your second rock bottom?
Yeah.
And you said yes. So you had made, how many, before the court case, how many All-Irelands had you won by then and how many All-Stars in the lead up to that?
Oh, it was 2018. So I'd say I had four All-Irelands with Cork. I had three at Milford. So, well, four with Cork. And I'd say I had two or three All-Stars, maybe two.
So I suppose it looked as if everything was, Aisling Thompson was living life and everything was brilliant.
Oh God, yeah, yeah.
And appearance-wise, like, I think people might be saying, oh, well, sure, she's got everything. She's got it all. You were probably the it girl. But there was an incident that happened, and you don't have to go into it, but there was an incident that happened on a night out that was your second rock bottom.
Mm.
Can you just kind of fill me in a small bit of that? And again, you don't have to go too personal or anything like that.
No, I suppose I was up in court for an assault case. I think people know about that at this stage. I can't really go into it, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't want
terms.
To either,
and it was after a game. There was a lot of drink involved, too much drink involved. Luckily, I wasn't convicted of anything. I don't have any convictions, but yeah, it was definitely a rock bottom for me. And I never like to make excuses for myself either. I think there's a way to hold yourself in public. I was most certainly wrong. And again, it just comes back to being an environment. We had played a game that day up in Offaly. And I'll never forget, we were terrible that day. I'd lost the plot. I was captain. Or no, I wasn't captain at the time. But I'd lost the plot anyway up there because we were playing terrible. And I remember that evening, it was really late getting back because, again, it was on and awfully during the day. So I think a few girls had agreed to go to like a 21st or something somewhere else. So I think only like a couple of us went out that night. So when we went out, we were playing catch up. And yeah, just things got out of hand, I guess. And I think after that time, obviously it was a very public thing. But I would say that, not to make any excuses for it, my understanding of it now and why I lost control in that moment on that night is because, going back to that previous time with the car crash and the boyfriends and all that moment, you know, those moments in my life, I feel like when I went into Cork and went through, you could say, on a winning streak with Cork and with my club, and that whole, like, let's say 5 or 6 year span or whatever it was, when that happened, I never had time to process. There wasn't one moment in my life after the car accident and the relationships that I had experienced, as well as the substance abuse. There wasn't one moment where I sat back and actually had the time to process everything that had happened. You know, I went from my boyfriend committing suicide into being this Aisling Thompson of Cork Camogie, where, again, you said people only knew what was on the surface, but they had not really knew nothing about me. I feel like I was only a ticking time bomb throughout that period. And I'll never forget, even leading up to that incident, like, I wasn't sleeping at night. Like, I had insomnia. I was having really bad PTSD. That was the first time I could identify what anxiety was. And, like, having panic attacks in the car, like, 24/7 on the way to training. But again, we didn't have a psychologist or anything at the time, not vocalizing it, not actually doing something about it. And again, it was the same process from before. I kind of went from being zero to hero without processing any of that. So I think over that course and over that period, like, things, I was probably a ticking time bomb. And I think it was just that one night, that one incident, having alcohol involved, you know, being up in Offaly that day, losing the plot. And then it was only a matter of time, I think. And unfortunately, things happened, and I guess my life had just turned upside down again in one blink of an eye, like. So, and again, I would never want to make an excuse for it. I won't. I take responsibility for it. I've been massively punished for it. But again, self-inflicted. And I will always take responsibility for that. And even to be able to understand that now and process it, I guess, is a really, it's a good thing, you know, that I can make sense of it. Not that I want to put the blame on anything, but look, I am where I am now. So I feel like only for that. And again, it's like the car accident, only for it. And I always like to go back to these things, only for my partner, that there's a reason for everything, even though it's ugly. I really do fully believe that everything happens for a reason. And I wouldn't be in the place I am now only for that.
Of course, I was just about to say it, like everything that's happened and all the awful traumatic stuff that's happened has shaped you into the person you are today. And if I was to ask you, would you change who you are now? What would you say?
I would say that I do have a lot of regrets and I wish that a lot of things that happened never happened. But would I change it? No, I wouldn't. You know, and as much as that might hurt people or that might be hard to hear, I wouldn't. Because I wouldn't be the person or athlete I am today only for it. I will always say that.
I think as well, it's probably, you know, you say the regrets, it's probably you, the hurt people you probably wish.
Because I've put my family through a lot. I've put my teammates through a lot. I've put people through a lot in life. And unfortunately, you just can't take back the things that you do. You know, it's the sick, it's the sad part of it. Like, and that's it. It's not me. It's not for how I feel. It's how I made everybody else feel. And I really do regret that and wish I could take it back. But selfishly, I wouldn't be in the position I am only for it. Like.
And have you forgiven yourself for...
I don't know. Okay. I had this conversation recently with someone because I always say now that like everything I do in life now is more of a give back to like my family, like, because I feel like I'm constantly trying to repay the shit that I put them through, you know, repay the happiness, I guess, and the moments in life that I took from them, you know. And for me too, like, I want to be the best athlete for me, but also for my family though. Like, yeah. A lot of it is for what I did and what I took away from them and other people too that respected me and I guess loved me even without knowing me personally. It's for those people too.
I love how you speak about your family, how much you love them so much, how much they never give up on you.
Yeah.
And your mom, and all your family, but your mom sounds like an exceptional woman. I love how, are you still best friends with her?
Yeah, thank God.
I'm nearly finished up. After the court case, how did you build yourself back up again to today?
Obviously, still having Cork. Now, I actually took that year out. I think it was around 2019.
I recall that.
Yeah, I stepped away from the team, but I think it was because I had a lot of animosity amongst the girls that were involved and just the whole Cork as a whole. I feel like I didn't probably get the support that, you know, I felt like I needed. And again, that's just me in a negative headspace at the time. Like, you know, I'm not going to put it on other people or what they should have done or what I should have done. I'm in a negative headspace and I knew that it was best not only for me, but for everybody else that like I wasn't there in 2019, because again, I was really negative. And I know I would have went in only to ruin everybody else's experience. And I didn't want to do that. So
which
I
is very
away.
Selfless of you.
Yeah,
it
in
is.
In a sense, I suppose. Yeah.
You weren't present. You were there, but you just weren't present.
No, exactly. So I stepped away and I didn't really do much for the year. I don't even know what I was doing again at that time. I can't really remember, but I think one of the first things I did, not initially, but I completely stepped away from social media.
And I was going to ask, was that time Instagram was big back then? Mm. So there was a torrent. Was there a torrent of abuse?
No one, there was, but what I always could get a kick out of was that nobody would directly say it to me. And the same on Twitter, like at me, like if you have something to say, do you know? And I honestly got a kick out of it because I'm not going to say it was warranted abuse because I don't believe anybody has the right to just abuse people online without even knowing a backstory. You're just looking at what's on the surface. But yeah, I would say like indirectly. And it's again around the time of that incident, I purposely didn't look at social media and stuff like that because I knew it was coming. But then, of course, for the actual process, I guess, for the actual hearing and stuff like that, I had to print out everything. And I mean to say there was a stack that size, like, of the abuse that was received, like, so it was tough to look at, I guess. And yeah, obviously when that had finished, I just stepped away completely. I think it was for around 3 years. I think I wasn't on Instagram or anything like that. So it was only recently enough, actually. It was around the time we went to Kenya with a few of the GPA. 50 players went, and after that, it was 2022. That was November. I think it was only around 22, start to 23, I came back on it. But I would say that's probably one of the best things I ever did. I honestly believe that people are brought up in a fake world on social media. and don't realise that there's a life outside of that that's extremely happy. You know, it's a life that we all once lived like if you're born in the 90s.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful life that is. And it just reminded me again of that online stuff is there if you want it, but there's a life outside of that that is completely happy. And as well, it gave me a complete, when I did come back to Cork in 2020, again, I wasn't on social media, so the focus was completely on myself and how I could make myself a better person, a better athlete. I started to eat better again. My recovery, I met Dara, my partner. He plays
Limerick
for Limerick.
Man. Yeah.
Great man. But he as well was a massive, he was like a Frankie, like he was a huge influence, like, you know, everything professional, what I didn't know in terms of being professional about sport, he brought to my sporting career. So that's when the whole professionalism came in terms of me and how I treat myself and the environments that I put myself in. And I guess being around that as well and not having social media made me realize a lot of things about myself and how I treated people and why certain incidents happened and the environments that I should put myself in and the friends that I have but need to separate from too on a personal level. I would say that always, like, my Cork girls are my Cork girls, but like away from that, I have a personal life, and you need to learn how to separate those friendships.
Yeah.
And you need to learn how to separate social media. I saw how much it influenced me and brought me back to being who I am, if not better, you know, not having that like negativity and not having that distraction more than anything.
I say, even if it went, as I said to you earlier, if it went in the morning, I don't think.
No, I wouldn't miss it. And not one bit.
I would agree with you. I was without social media there for a certain period for up nearly 4 months and best thing ever.
Yeah.
You're unaware of any, like, some, oh, do you see this stuff written about you online?
It's constant comparison.
Comparison, you know, is chief of joy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's a constant comparison. And that's it too. Like, I'll even, like, I'm on Instagram at the moment, but I wasn't on it for the entire league. Like, you'll see it come championship now as well. Like, I won't be anywhere to be got on social media because even if I'm just flicking, I'm already comparing myself to somebody else or I'm looking at what the opposition are saying or, do you know, even just a distraction from a sport point of view, like Cork or this or there's a headline about Cork Camogie. Like, I don't want any distractions. Nothing. It's me and the dressing room and that's it.
And before we finish up, you popped in here very kindly because you're going training after this.
Yeah.
Fair play. And I'm not the best when it comes to the All Camogie, so I'll steer clear of any questions about that because Ballydesmond is a football place. But before I finish up, Aisling, right, I just want to ask you, these are going to be questions I'm going to ask every guest.
Okay.
And the first question is, if you could go back to your lowest moment and whisper one truth to yourself, what would it be?
Just keep going. Just keep going.
Second one, what did rock bottom teach you that success never could?
I guess that there's always a better version of myself.
And finally, what's the one message you'd give someone who feels like they're never going to make it out?
There's always light at the end of the tunnel. I know it's cliche, but there genuinely is, like.
Aisling Thompson, on that note, thank you so, so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having
I'm
me.
I'm so glad you saw my Instagram message, even though you're not on Instagram that much.
Yeah, that's and, why I'm so bad at it, at replying. Just,
I always say, like, I'm like people who follow me on Instagram, whatever, they all know that I get these mad intrusive thoughts and stuff that's gone on my head and a bit of background when Aisling came in. Like, I was telling you all these things. I was telling Aisling how I couldn't wear a bra for the week and everything because I cut myself with the running and all this. Like, and do you know what it was? And I don't mind people hearing this. I said to you, I was nervous meeting you because I think, I knew you were really nice in emails, really nice in a message. And I was blown away you agreed to do this with me. But I suppose the idea was Aisling Thompson coming in now. But my God, what a beautiful soul you are.
Thanks
lovely,
so much.
Lovely girl. I'm over impressed. You really, really are. And I might, as I said, I might know much about Camogie, but I hope they win this year. So thank you so much.
And thank you.